All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight as we begin Masters Week, the start of the first golf major, and we'll talk a little bit of golf here later in the show. But first, we have a new national champion in college basketball as the Villanova Wildcats hit a shot at the buzzer, a three-pointer to win 77-74 over North Carolina, one of those dramatic finishes that you may never forget. And Glass, you know, that's going to be the story. That's going to be the picture everybody watches for years and years and years. But, this, you know, talking about the game itself, it really, to me, comes down to Villanova and how gritty this team played, how gritty they played on both ends of the floor. They got out-rebounded pretty significantly. They allowed 11 of 17 three-point shooting from North Carolina, but they made it very, very difficult for all that height we talked about on Monday to have easy baskets in the lane. 16 of 46, North Carolina was shooting inside of the three-point line. They made it hard on North Carolina to get the easy stuff. And at the end of the day, it allows them the chance for the buzzer beater, and they end up making the buzzer beater. So to me, it's the grittiness of Villanova.
It was, and that was one of their strengths going into that, and that's what we talked about on Monday in our brief time together. We thought that if Villanova had a chance, they'd have to turn this into a junkyard fight, not a game in the 80s and the 90s, and that's essentially what they did. And they weren't afraid of the fight. We knew that wasn't going to be the case. They're a traditional Big East team, and they played like it on Monday night. Yeah, it's just a great basketball game, Dave. The officials really didn't get in the way. There's a couple calls that you kind of worried you at the end there, but it wasn't something where you just sat back and said, geez, what's happening here? It was good basketball. It was teams both playing to their strengths, and a couple unbelievable shots in the final 5 seconds decided it. If you were a neutral in that game, that was great. It was everything you wanted to see. It'd be better if you're a Villanova fan because you got the oh my gosh and the oh my really gosh after that. Neutral is like, wow, that's an unbelievable shot. Well, that's another unbelievable shot, and there you go. But Villanova did the things to get back into the game that North Carolina kind of had their way with in the first half. They got better shots in the first half. In the second half, Villanova, again, they talked about it after the game. They had a big players-only part of the halftime meeting and said, we got to start playing Villanova basketball again. And that's not giving up easy buckets. That's not letting loose balls slide. That's taking good and better shots. And they're shooting unbelievable. The unbelievable percentage they shot continued both from three-point land and from two-point land. Missed a couple free throws down the stretch that could have made this game a lot more boring. Yeah. But that's part of it. The pressure, the lights are on, the finality, the win when you're a champion. That stuff starts creeping into your mind, I think, sometimes when you're standing there in those 55-minute timeouts that go on and on and on and on. And the teams that execute down the stretch are usually the ones that do. And the best part about this game, at least from my point of view, was nobody lost it. It was won. It's just like the Masters we're going to talk about here in a little bit. That's a tournament you go out and you have to win the golf tournament. It's not something like the U.S. Open where you hope to avoid bogeys and doubles.
Don't screw up.
You just want to get in the clubhouse and be done with it. That wasn't the case in this game at all. It was big-time players making big-time shots. It was big plays being made. We'll get into all those. But overall, the two best teams of the weekend by far, not even close, played for a national championship, and they were complete box office. They gave you every dollar, whatever you paid to get in that arena, however late you stayed up. It was everything you could hope for in a final. Big plays, smart plays, panic plays, pressure plays, and it was just great. It was a great advertisement for college basketball. You had seniors on both teams making the hugest plays down the stretch. Mm-hmm. It was everything that college basketball really hasn't been recently. And, again, a great outcome for Villanova fans. Tough one for North Carolina fans, but again, to get to how this game ended, very interesting on both sides. You thought for a minute Carolina's going to blow the doors off the place. You think with 5 minutes to go, Nova's up 10, they're going to blow the doors out and run it home. No, that's what a great basketball has. It has ebbs and flows. It has ups and downs. It has punch, counterpunch. Mm-hmm. Who can take a punch? Who can throw a punch? Who has enough guts in the last 5 minutes to get punched and get back up and hit the shot at the buzzer?
Well,
delightful. Absolutely delightful.
We talked about it on Monday, and it played out a lot like this. You know, Villanova needed to make make it gritty. They need to make it a fight. And they did that early and frankly, delivered that first blow at North Carolina and kind of stunned them a little bit. I mean, they didn't jump all over them, but they stunned them a bit. And Carolina, you could see for a little while, there was like, all right, it's going to be a little harder than we think. They settled down into their game. They got they got some of the shots they wanted towards the end of the first half. They opened up. It would have been a seven-point lead at half if Nova hadn't made a nice play and gotten a nice bucket right there before half. And even that, you could feel, was a really great play for Nova just heading into the half or a five-point lead at half. Yeah,
even
I mean,
if they missed that final shot. But the point for me was on that play was not the result. The point was the effort getting back to block the shot.
Right.
That's what turned the second half for Villanova. The intensity went up. The defense went up. They were good. They were getting a little manhandled in the paint.
Yeah.
They were getting a little pushed and shoved around there, but that play seemed to spark their confidence. So when they came back out after that players only little meeting there, you saw a different team, and it's 21-9 right out of the gate in the second half. Yep. So it wasn't necessarily the score at either. It was the block for me and the effort play put into that, because that's an easy point to say it hasn't been our last 5 minutes of the half. I'm going to hang my head. Jackson's going to dunk it anyhow. I'm just going to run behind him. I'm not going to waste a stupid foul with 5 seconds left. The guy made a gutty play. I think it was Hart, wasn't it? He decided, I don't know how many fouls he had at the time, but he said, you know what? I'm going to make a play on this.
Yeah.
And Jackson should have dunked the basketball. Why he's going under the rim? Sophomore. Kid. He's not in these big situations. In these situations, you're not going to take one play and define a game unless you hit a 25-footer at the buzzer to win it.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
All these things add up throughout the game. But that's what made it great. It wasn't played perfect. Basketball is not a game of perfection. It's a game of making plays, stopping other teams from scoring yourself. But I think that was the momentum play that into the half they said, okay, we can do this. Not a big deal.
Right.
They're human, just like we are. Yep. We can make plays just like they can make plays.
Because that was that chance. I mean, that was that chance towards the end there where Carolina, again, they go in 9, 10 points. I mean, who knows?
Well, they go in 9 and come out and hit a 3 in the second after up 12. They hit another 3. They're up 15.
Who knows what happens? And that's, Carolina has put up some big numbers, but as we said the other day, it's been 18-point leads. When they win these games, they have not necessarily in several of these gone out and blown them up by 30 to bring it down. It's been a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, and then suddenly you're down 15-20. And you go, oh, crud, this is over.
The key battle in this game was, could Villanova, A, defend it well enough, and B, keep up in the scoring column? And the answer was yes, barely.
Yeah.
And then the key for Carolina was...
Yeah, they got
was,
killed on the offensive boards.
We knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And Achefu, he played, he looked fine, he didn't look like he was too injured. And the key for Carolina was, would they fall in love with the three-point shot and get away from what made him successful, or would they continue to play the way they did? Fascinating. It was fascinating and fantastic, and that's all you can ask for in the final college basketball game of the year.
Yep.
The two best teams gave you a hell of a performance, a Hall of Fame performance, a best game ever type performance, and I hope you had a chance to watch it. If not, luckily CBS Sports Network is showing it about every 15 minutes.
All the time.
It's great. You should watch it, and you should watch it again because it's fantastic.
It was a great game, great shooting performance in two straight games by Villanova. We'll talk more about that when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note, it's the 6th of April, so you know what that means. Our first Reds game of the year, 7 o'clock pregame, right after the show. Reds home to Philadelphia. So it is baseball season officially starting tonight here on WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Villanova is your national champions. 77-74 victors over the North Carolina Tar Heels on a last-second buzzer-beater three-pointer by Chris Jenkins. And, there's a couple things that I'm going to remember about this game, but one in particular is more of a just kind of a general vision that I keep having every time I think about watching it, and it's Archie Diacono battling everybody who's got 8 inches on him under the basket.
What class is
all
he?
Night long. I think he's a senior.
There you go.
But I mean, you talk about strength. First of all, he's got a real nice body build. So 6'3", they list him at 195. He's strong, but he was all night long. He had a bigger guy, a 6'8", 6'9" guy. He was guarding Garden all night long and rooting out of there and fronting, and he worked his butt off. Yeah. And that, to me, embodies like, everything Villanova looked like.
Kind of looked like Yogi at times.
He
in
did.
There,
he
fighting
did.
Guys
Absolutely.
In the post. And you heard, I can't remember if it was Barkley or Grant Hill crying about, look at the matchup, look at the matchup, yeah. Throw the ball in there, throw the ball in there. Big guys don't like little guys.
No, they don't. Especially around their legs.
They got them because you can't dribble.
Sticking that butt
you
in their
put
knees.
The ball on the ground. And Villanova dug on everything. Digging means when it's not your man and it goes by, they reach in.
Yeah.
They're reaching, they're trying to get the ball. And the ball goes on the deck in the paint. 10 hands go in there from Villanova and try to get the basketball. Well, that's what they do. That's what they're trained to do. That's when they talk about Villanova basketball. That's part of their anger. That's part of their directed frustration. They don't want you to get things easy, and you can't give Carolina anything easy in the paint. I mean, how many people have tried to play them straight
anyways.
Up? They've tried to zone. They've tried to do this. They've tried to do that. Again, they didn't let Carolina walk all over them in the paint because they made the paint a difficult place to operate. Not many teams, Dave, can do that. That's why when Carolina didn't hit many jump shots to get things going, that's why it was a little slow. But guess what? They start hitting some jumpers. All of a sudden, things start opening up. They've got to go out and get guys. And then Carolina, especially Barry, the Barry kid's going to be a really good player. The point guard is going to – again, all the kids on Carolina are good players. But, again, that didn't open up until he was busting people off the dribble, getting in the lane, and then he started knocking down some jump shots. But, again, Villanova had a great game plan. Make them knock down threes. You think they're going to hit as many as they did against Syracuse out there? Or what was Syracuse? They were 0-10 against Syracuse. Yeah. Second half was better, but this hasn't been a team that consistently knocked down
shots.
They're
not a three-point shooting team all year long. Again, IU gave them some of sank everything they had. In this game, Bryce Johnson had 14-8, and that's disappointing for Bryce Johnson, like it or not. I mean, those aren't bad numbers, but they are for him when you think you have that huge advantage inside.
But that's what Villanova did. You have to give them credit.
Meeks had 4 points and 7 rebounds.
Meeks was terrible.
Yeah.
He was bad.
Hicks had 4 points and 4 rebounds.
He gets in foul trouble. He comes off the bench and fouls a guy. But the problem with Johnson is you have to remember, there's a difficult balance to strike in the universe. When Barry and Page have it going, you tell him not to go drive and get layups?
No, of course.
Well, but Johnson can't pass the ball to himself. Mm-hmm. Barry and Page always have the ball. Carolina's offense always starts on the perimeter. They try to go outside, or they try to go inside, then back out again.
Right, and Jackson, the only thing Jackson did was hit 3 three-pointers.
And he gets pushed out, and Johnson's catching the ball at 24 feet away from the basket, starting the offense high. He's trying to get movement down there with smaller, quicker guys on him. Villanova had enough athletes. They had enough guys that were long that could play Johnson where they didn't need to overhelp. They couldn't help because the guards were hurting them. Barry and Page both had 20 in the game.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like Carolina was neutralized. It was just a different Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we know Bryce Johnson getting put back dunks and tip dunks, he got a lot of those. He had a couple alley-oops. I think he had 4 dunks and 6 field goals. I hit that one
that
leaner.
Be,
he hit one leaner off the glass with about 45 seconds to go, or a minute, whatever that was in there, where he caught it, and 1:07 to go to make it 70-69. He caught it, turned, and put it right. It was gorgeous. Gorgeous shot. Where has that been all day? That doesn't give Villanova credit. That bothers me. You heard the guys on TV say that. Said, oh, just now
you're
going
give it to him.
Well, because he's been getting pushed out of his spot.
They outfought him. They made it hard on the perimeter to get it in, and they made it really hard
fair,
for the guy to be comfortable. Absolutely.
Johnson. I'll put him on my team any day for two reasons.
Absolutely.
Number one, he's got a great motor. He plays angry. And number three, he didn't take bad shots.
No, he didn't.
He didn't force anything.
No, he didn't.
He knew he had teammates that could help him.
Right.
You've seen different
guys. And to be fair, they did. I mean, the guys around him
in
the front court didn't, but the guys in the back court were on fire.
They were. What Carolina struggled with was finishing at the basket because of the physicality of Villanova, because of the active hands of Villanova. Those were the two keys. You didn't see, besides Johnson, anybody getting anything easy around the hoop. Even that last play of the game, I thought one of the penultimate plays of the game, here goes 3-point game. Here goes Page in for a layup, does everything but go in.
Mm-hmm.
Villanova grabs the rebound, and Page Villanova's it back.
Takes it back.
He goes
right
in there and rips it out and scores.
Right,
how do he score? 14 guys in there.
Yep.
He's the smallest guy in the mosh pit, and he outworked everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a game of this magnitude and these great plays consistently made,
yep,
especially down the stretch, that's what you want to see. Those are great teaching points, and they're seniors making these plays. And that's not to knock Jackson because he's a sophomore. Barry's a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson's a senior. He makes a tough turnaround. Boom, he's got to make it.
Right.
Diakono makes the pass. What's Jenkins? Junior? Senior?
I think so.
Again, upperclassmen making plays. It was great to see everybody, and you didn't have to point and say, oh, that's a guy who threw it away.
Junior.
That's Freddie Brown.
Yeah.
He threw it to Worthy.
Yeah, exactly.
He did that. But it was a fantastic basketball game. But you saw what got Carolina back in the game. Getting after it defensively. Simple as that. They couldn't trade baskets anymore, and that's what they got in a problem. Actually, they got down 10. They weren't trading anything. They were getting shoved around. They were getting beat up and down the court.
Yeah.
And once Carolina got into them, and made things difficult. I mean, Archie Diakono threw one of the worst passes you'll ever see from a senior point guard in a big spot there.
About 15 feet up in the air.
To no one.
Out of bounds.
And there was no one no one near it. Tipped or not tipped, who cares? That's not a big deal. It's not – that's just – pressure does things. And you started wondering, why did Carolina wait so long in that game? Why did – when it wasn't going their way in the first part of the second half, you didn't see him switch it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to knock Roy Williams for that? I think he can a little bit. But the other point is, he knows he has a potent offense, and he knows – that if he gets his offense going, things like that usually take care of themselves. But again, Carolina had to hit a couple big threes in a row to get back in that game. That game was heading south quickly, and they did. They got back into it. But just the battles out there. There were great battles all over the court. There was just premium play. I can't remember three sloppy plays off the top of my head. The Archie Diakono pass gets a pass because it's a half court trap, and they sprung it on him. And again, you've got to handle those situations. And he made up for it gleefully at the end with a great decision.
If there's one thing that surprised me, 333-2665 is our phone number. If there's one thing that surprised me, just looking statistically, 11-17 on threes for North Carolina. That's unusual. They did it against Indiana, but they don't do it very often. But to me, the big one is that they only got 13 free throw attempts. And yes, it was a perimeter-based. They turned it into a perimeter game, Villanova did. But with the small bodies going after the big bodies, I'm a little surprised. At the end of the day, you don't see more fouls called, and you see North Carolina going to the line.
You get a little reputation with Villanova. It reminds you of the teams, and I always talk about this when we talk about fouling and the such, John Thompson's Georgetown team, Nolan Richardson's team. Jay Wright has that mantra. Villanova, yes, they can score some points if they have to. We've seen that in the tournament. But when you talk about these teams, they usually get up in your business. Mm-hmm. That's what they're known for. So when you do it all the time, it doesn't look out of place to the referees.
Right. Butler was like that.
You've
for a long
sent
time.
A message saying, this is our style of play. Mm-hmm. You've seen us on tape. It's nothing new. Now, if Carolina comes out and does that, you might see a quicker whistle because they're like, where'd you guys come from?
What's that?
You're not allowed to do that. But when Kennedy Meeks goes 1-for-8 from the field in 20 minutes and all 8 shots were inside of 3 feet.
That doesn't
happen in Carolina wins a lot of games. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Their advantage is what? Making easy deuces and putting the pressure on the other team to keep up with them. And when those aren't going in, how are the offensive rebounds? What do they have on there?
16 offensive rebounds.
I mean,
to two?
Yeah. We thought that would be an advantage. Mm-hmm. But when Kennedy Meeks is tipping his own misses up from a foot away and they're not going
then it's not a great stat.
That's exactly right. Why the stats lie to you. So, again, in this game, how many turnovers were in this game?
Not many.
20 total?
Something like that.
It was ridiculously low. Yeah. And again, that's great basketball because it is a game of imperfect. Yeah. And Villanova does play hard. And that shows you how good Carolina is because as much as they dig, as much as they help, as much as they're quick and everywhere else, Carolina had how many? They had 11 turnovers.
And let's be fair. It says 11 in the box score. It felt like there was closer to 22. I mean, it did. Just watching the game and watching how much they
remember, when the balls get tipped and bottled around and the offensive team comes back with it, it's not a turnover because it doesn't change possession. The hands are active. There's plenty of deflections. There's quick, long, big guys all over the court. And that's what made it interesting. But to see the two things that stuck out for Carolina was they got nothing from the bench. No support staff there at all. They didn't have that one guy. And Booth comes off the bench and gets 20.
Great.
This is career high in an NCAA championship game from a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't before the game say, hey, Booth.
That guy's going to go nuts. Yeah,
get us 20, but no one stopped him either. That's the other part of it. He gave that extra support to the guys on Villanova. You knew you were going to get points from Archie, Hart, and Jenk. You knew that was coming. You knew you were going to get those. Brunson didn't have a great night. They rode Booth. They just kept Booth in the game. Why not? Ride the guy. It's hot. And he took you where you needed to go, and that's the beauty of the theater. You've had Luke, the kid from Louisville, hits every three-pointer he looks at. It's Spike Albrecht in those games. Exactly. Just guys you don't think are going to show
up. It was Grayson Allen in the final last year. We didn't know who he was.
Foul trouble. Duke's in it tight.
Yep.
And they got three guys on the bench that are starters, and here comes Allen that's averaging 2 points a game and tears the house.
Yeah.
Tears the roof off the house. It's fantastic theater, and now it's great to watch.
This next question is going to hit home for Indiana fans.
Don't make it sting too hard.
It's all right. 1987, one of the greatest games of all time. Does this beat that?
Yes, it does. And you know why it beats it? For two reasons. The shot that ends a game goes right to the top of the list.
Yeah.
Derek Wittenberger.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Charles catches it. It's short. He dunks it.
Yeah.
With Akeem Olajuwon standing right there, Michael Winslow can jump out of the gym. That happened.
Right.
That happened. The point is the shot has to finish the game. In my world,
yeah.
Somebody's comparing it to the Christian Watford shot. That's a December game against Kentucky.
No, it's just the play was similar.
It is, but let's just put the wall up. And sadly, they don't give you extra rings, banners, bonus points, or trophies for winning it at the buzzer.
Right.
Was the Syracuse Indiana game a great college basketball game? Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
But the way
it was a nice ending, but you
Derek
know what?
Holman missed a front end.
You had free throws missed at the end.
That was an individual mistake.
They let the clock run off three or four seconds right there at the end.
They panicked at the end.
This had two crazy shots to end it.
In 4.7 seconds, you saw a double clutch three-pointer and a 26-footer.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about the last shot is, and you got to remember this too, and I'm not knocking the kid of the situation, that's not a hard shot to make in a tie game.
No, that's true.
You shoot the ball naturally in a tie game.
It was a good shot. It was in rhythm. It was not a crazy shot.
There is no pressure on that shot because if you miss, you have 5 minutes.
Exactly.
It's not a sudden death first to score in overtime. That's a shot. You catch it. You stroke it. You make it. Those are easier to make than down one.
Yeah.
So smart,
in rhythm and everything.
Smart gets a little there because number one, he's not option number one.
Yeah,
Alford's option number one there. There's no doubt about it.
Well, they wanted Thomas to do something with it too on that play.
And he did the right thing. Right. He didn't force it. He kicked it to Smart, who took a dribble, faded on the right
at. Yeah, we go back about 87, but that fadeaway out of bounds is not necessarily what they were looking for.
And that went in. But that's the point. He had to take that shot. Because there wasn't time to swing it and find Alford there.
Yep.
So that shot is a bigger shot in the sense of onions than Jenkins' shot because he has no recourse if he misses.
Right.
If Smart misses that shot,
they're done.
They might get one more half quarter because Syracuse's free throw shooting a little wobbly. If Coleman gets the other rebound, he hits two, they're down three. Now it's a big one to tie it.
Right.
Didn't happen, luckily. And then the great Bob Knight has to explain why there's no timeout, has to explain why Alford didn't
get
the ball,
exactly.
And has to explain he doesn't call timeout, he takes them all to heaven with him, because his team is more prepared at the end of the game to win in those situations. He doesn't want to give the other team an advantage to set up their defense. And Alford doesn't get the ball. Thankfully, we'll never
have to talk about that ever again.
It's a great shot. Somebody brought up Ramil Robinson. He made two free throws on the worst call in the history of the NCAA final. That's a foul.
That's awful.
In a tie game, it's a foul. What do you mean it's a foul? Oh, my gosh. Makes me nauseous. What other great finishes have there been? Somebody threw in the Christian Laettner game. That's a regional final. They'd win two more games.
Well, the Butler-Duke one, but that's a missed shot.
It's a missed shot. And
from half court.
A half-court shot that hits the rim all of a sudden, it's in the Hall of Fame?
Exactly.
Give me a break, guys. Come on, quit. That's the thing I don't like. I don't like pounding square holes and round pegs. Yeah. Because when something like this happens, all we want to do is run and compare it to something else. Yeah. Enjoy this.
Yeah.
You're throwing in missed shots. Hey, you're throwing in December games and free throws.
I put this at the top because it was so well played from start to finish. You got the drama
at the end,
but you also got the drama throughout the whole
Calipari
game.
Doesn't
you had
guard,
leads from both teams.
Calipari doesn't guard the inbounds play. Pitino doesn't guard the baseball passer, and add Roy Williams to the list of guys that don't guard the inbounds guy.
Well,
because the guy runs side by side with him, Archie Diacono's got a whole other set of circumstances to deal with. Ifs and buts are candies and nuts, but what happened is, in those three situations, they're all completely different in their level of totality and finality.
Mm-hmm.
The point was, no one guards the inbounds.
Well.
Maybe
no one guarded the shooter either.
Maybe change it up a bit. The shooter, if you rewind it, and it's all over the internet, is no less than 25 feet. And when he lets the ball go, four is flying at him. It is not an uncontested shot. It's released.
It's not what you'd like.
It doesn't have
a – Maybe it's
but
got
again,
enough,
but again,
it's not what you want.
But again, in a tie game, this is why the situational part of this is huge.
Sure.
In a tie game, any shot beats you.
Right.
Do you give up the drive?
Well, that's why I wouldn't.
Well, that's the point.
That's why I wouldn't go real hard on the inbounder. Because if the ball gets inbounds, where do you want the time wasted? Do you want to give them extra space on the other end where your basket is? Or would you rather them waste time on the end there?
The philosophy is, if you're going to take away the paint for the drive,
how do you guard the three-pointer?
Do you need two guys to do that or just one?
Right.
Because essentially their answer was they were going to put one in the paint, everybody else guards, and here comes the guy late. So, do you let him bust it, get to the hoop, maybe get fouled.
Right.
What's Arch shoot from the free throw line? 90?
That's good.
It's real good. Or do you force a guy to have to take a 25-footer with a guy jumping late at him? I think from that standpoint, that's why that shot is really good because, well, it's tied. You're fine. The execution of the play is great. But that wasn't some 12-footer pull-up.
I mean, no, it wasn't. Big, it wasn't an easy shot.
It was not an easy shot. And there's a guy, a 6'9" guy, running out with the hand at you, and he makes it. Was he guarded? No, he wasn't guarded because the way he came up the
floor. I think it was a screen in the backcourt. Yeah,
there was the screen went first, and then he trailed the play and just ball.
Give me.
And he hit it, and it was beautiful. It was absolute poetry. Yeah, free throws and regional fine. Go away. Can you watch 2 minutes of basketball before you start? Enjoy what happens now. That was one of the greatest plays ever. Let's not try to pound it into something that it wasn't because it wasn't.
Following that double clutch shot by Page, too. I mean,
that was an unbelievable shot.
Big plays by kids at the end of the game.
And we'll talk about that briefly when we come back because that was a big senior play on both ends that created maybe not the ending that either team thought was going to happen there.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Again, we're scheduled to have Reds baseball right after the show, 7 o'clock.
Checking now.
Philadelphia in town. Pregame, 7 o'clock. In Cincinnati. It is, of course, raining around here, so we'll just check in to see if it's going to be rained out. But tune in. Don't go anywhere right after the show, and we'll have something for you.
First one of the year.
That's right.
Go to our website. You can see the full schedule. Pirates on Friday. Then it's 3 in Chicago next week and 1 in St. Louis. 4 of the 5 days
Start off hot.
Start off on your division. Get a good start, and the Reds will need one this year. So good stuff there. Brandon Phillips out of the lineup tonight. Stomach bug. So he will not be in Cincinnati, and we hope the weather misses the Great American Ballpark.
333-2665 is the phone number, and as you were alluding to there before the break, this game, you know, so much of the last several years in basketball has been about the underclassmen. And you know, you've got some teams that have gotten there that have had tons of underclassmen. There's three of them that got drafted last year for Duke. It's been a lot about that. But this year...
Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly. Kentucky. I mean, this year it was about seniors making big plays down the stretch. I mean, it was Archer Diacono, it was Page, it was Johnson. It was guys that have been veterans that have been around for a while. They showed their worth.
Even guys in their junior years, too, that have been around. Mm-hmm. Been around the block and the final play. The final defensive play for Villanova was very strange when you got a 6'9" guy diving for the basketball 25 feet away from it.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do there, and they talked about that. It's like, hey, if we get to this on the clock, we're going to do this, we get to do that. And when he scrambled, everybody else was forced to scramble, and that's what makes the imperfect ballet beautiful because guys had to react. And Page, at that time, he makes it at 4.7, so he probably shot it with 6. At that point, down 3, you go get a layup blocked, you're in big, big, big problems. You almost have to shoot the 3 there. But to take that chance and to have it work, he makes a double clutch shot, and you just start wondering, oh, my gosh, if Carolina gets us to overtime, they were down 10
5 minutes ago.
The Villanova missed those foul shots. Archie Diacono threw the ball away. Mm-hmm. You just start writing the obituary for Villanova there, and then they run that play and knock it down at the buzzer. And that's what makes games great. The guy didn't screw up by diving for the ball. He just tried to make a play. It didn't work.
Yeah.
It led to a double-clutch three-pointer that, sadly, no one's going to talk about in about 2 weeks and forget from here to eternity unless you're a Carolina
fan. That shot
was
unbelievable.
It was an unbelievable shot. It was unbelievable to take it. It was unbelievable to have the composure to trust yourself to double-clutch that. I'm not sure how many of those you practice.
Right.
But he knew it had to go up, and that's what seniors do. Mm-hmm. Freshman kid might have tried to make a hot shot pass underneath the basket there, hit somebody in the back of the head.
Right.
Senior makes a play.
Gotten freaked out.
Beautiful. Then Archie Diacono comes down, senior point guard, makes a play, hits the guy. What's the senior do? Take it all the way to the bucket, pull up, get the glory for himself? No, he makes the right basketball play. Mm-hmm. That's why the game was beautiful. You saw more of that than you saw anything else. 21 turnovers, not a lot of garbage going on out there. Hard-nosed, solid blue chip style basketball. And congratulations to Jay Wright. Been knocked out of the tourney early the last couple of years. Got plenty of heat for it and deservedly so. You got good teams, you could be in the first weekend, you get heat. That's what happens.
He's got it. Bill Self has got it all of a sudden. And, but you got that high
Bill
ranking.
Bill Self's also
got
a rank too.
Well, I understand.
That's the other thing.
You're ranked number two or one all every year, and they expect to have something happen.
You just move the expectation level up because you win your conference every year.
Every year.
You win your conference tournament, I don't know,
you're
8 to 12
high
years.
Seed.
Yeah, you're a high seed, of course, and you get everybody's best shot. And Villanova had to take out two number ones, Kansas and North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Fair play to them. They were a two seed, so I don't think you can play any more than that. Can you?
They got Kansas, they got Carolina, they got the two in Oklahoma
too,
they got the three in Miami, they got the seven in Iowa. I mean, they didn't have anything easy
Villanova
along the stretch.
Thrashing the Eastern Seaboard, Miami, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Woof. So there you have it. Great win for them and a great, great theater. And, yes, that was probably the best game other than their 85 win because they played so well in that game. So Villanova,
and again,
a program with two wins, has two of the best championship games ever. I don't think there's any way around that.
71% in the semifinal and 58% shooting in the final.
Don't forget.
And again, they have the record for a Final Four shooting performance in their final game against Georgetown.
It was
85,
the second half. Yeah.
It was 77%.
Or whatever that ridiculous amount was in half number two. Was it? I think it was just the second half. Of that. Whatever it was unbelievable. And they also shot 57% from three-point range, including none bigger than the final one.
Yep.
So it was drama. It went in. There was no shady foul or someone shooting three free throws. There was no anything except kids executing and nobody watching because the game was on TBS.
There you go. I saw it somehow. I found
12 million
out, found out
viewers down. And those people who watched last year did not get to see that. Ouch.
Makes all the sense in the world. We got to take another quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk some Masters. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, a reminder, we've got Reds baseball scheduled right after the show, 7 o'clock pregame, Philadelphia in town. We'll have them again on Friday night, 7 o'clock pregame for the Pirates in town.
Let's go to a live look at the Taco Bell weather puddle, Dave. What do you see out there?
I see a lot of rain.
It's coming down pretty good, Bloomington.
It is,
And we hope that doesn't sneak over to Cincinnati, and hopefully the Reds can get game number two in our first game of the season. Up and going right after we're done with you.
Speaking of weather, at least, the Masters, this edition of the Masters, is scheduled to have all kinds of wind down in Georgia.
Sure.
And so never know what you're going to get when you get down to Augusta, but wind blowing around.
Springtime.
Could be interesting. So I guess the question is, it has to every year, with the weather we're scheduled to get, who does this take out? Does this take out anybody? What does this do to the field?
It hurts on the three of the four par fives will play into the wind. So that'll prevent some guys from getting home. But good guys that can't get home are already good wedge players.
Right.
So if it blows.
Yeah, like Zach Johnson. Yeah. I mean, he won by going for birdies on par
fives. That's it. He laid up on every par five. And if that's the issue, that's not going to bother him. Because most guys that are close anyhow, they'd rather have 82 yards because that's their dream wedge shot instead of having 16 yards off the green on a downhill lie.
Right.
They'd rather have that's how you win the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
You just
do what you
just hit
do.
It. Yeah. You have to take out of play
what
things that
like.
Make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
The old joke, and I wrote about this in my preview, the old thing about golf course designers, and Pete Dye is notorious for this. This is Alistair McKenzie and Bob Jones from a long time ago. Golfers hate to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hit if it's 300 yards dead straight ahead, they know exactly what club they're going to hit and do it. Do I lay up here? Do I lay up here? Do I go for it there? What happens if I do this? That is why you don't see a lot of inexperienced guys contend or win this golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that have gone through this ringer, that have gone through the back nine on Sunday, no one to step on the gas pedal, no one to lock on the emergency brake.
Exactly.
You take your par and you get out, and there's more chances.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a U.S. Open where you have three holes.
We only got one or two.
They got a drivable par four. You got to make birdie there. Right. They've got 158-yard par three. You have to hit the green and give yourself a good birdie chance there. And probably one of the U.S. Open usually only has two par fives.
Yeah.
Usually one of those is a birdieable hole. The rest, survival of the fittest.
Just
that's not
force,
the case here.
No.
You don't have
there's
a shot here. You don't have a shot at Augusta. Knock it close, make a par, and get out.
Yeah.
The guys that are good, the guys that are experienced, the guys that put up low numbers there and win green jackets, get that.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that thinks, yeah, I'm going to hit a rope hook 245, catch the front, have it slide on back, and have 6 feet for eagle. Well,
good luck.
You're more than welcome to try.
Right.
And then you've seen some bounce off the rocks and land on the green.
Yeah.
You've seen some that look great and roll off the back of the green into the other pond mm-hmm. because they don't stop. So life is full of difficult decisions. With the wind, though, no, it's windy in spring in the Atlanta area. It always mm-hmm. has been. And that's not a huge difference. The difference is when it gusts and stays gusty.
Right, you don't know what's happening.
Well, 12s always swirling even when there's no wind.
Right,
so
exactly.
Go figure that out.
Yeah, right.
You play some shots in the tree line, you play some shots exposed. That's why the experience is the key factor this week, and it's not even a discussion. Sure, every year you get a guy that shows up and shoots a great number. It doesn't happen all the time. That's the whole point. Jordan Spieth's a little bit different than those guys. Tiger Woods, a little bit different than those guys.
Yep.
So in the historical sense of things, the guys upsetting the apple cart are few and far between.
333-2665 is a phone number, so heading in.
Who's not going to win? Tell me that.
Well, there's a lot of guys that aren't going to win.
Well, we have the official this afternoon.
Jimmy Walker.
Jimmy Walker will not win.
Will not win. He won the three-point contest. The par three contest, yes, and apparently set a record. Not that it matters, but congratulations to Jimmy Walker. Take your one trophy.
Or not.
Take it home with you at the end of the weekend.
Nobody has ever won the par. And the par three contest has been going on a long time.
Well, here's what's interesting to me about heading into the Masters right now. In the last few years, we've been wondering what group of guys is the next group of guys.
Can't wait to put a label on it, can't
we? I know. I understand that. But it's exciting right now because you can point to 5, 6, 7 guys all have right this second could all be number one golfers. And you're talking about Jason Day, of course, who is. You're talking about Rory McIlroy. Jordan Spieth has obviously in the conversation.
Bubba, Ricky, Stenson, Johnson.
Justin Johnson. I mean, kinds of guys
Mickelson.
Right now that are playing really, really, really well.
Fantastic.
And I mean, take Mickelson out of there just from the standpoint of you're talking about the next 10 years of your mm-hmm. career type of thing. And you've already got Jordan Spieth that's in there. You've already got Rory McIlroy that's in there. I mean,
all
you've got those guys right there. And here they are all ready to win this one, too.
All in their 20s. It's amazing. The field is great. The field's deep. And that's actually there's only 89 guys, but the number of players that can win it is huge because entering the tournament, you didn't even talk about Adam Scott. Heck, he's won the green jacket.
He's in the
mid-30s, so that's why he doesn't get in that conversation. But he's in his prime.
Yeah.
Zach Johnson's in his prime. He won the Open Championship at St. Andrews last year. He's one of like four guys ever to win at the Masters and win at St. Andrews.
And again, if you're talking about gusting weather and stuff like
God.
That, Zach Johnson could be perfect.
Johnson won, what did he shoot? One over when he won the Masters back in 07 because it gusted all week.
It was bad weather, yeah.
It was all week on that. So it's real simple. The formula there is you got to keep others off the card. Phil Mickelson was, third a couple years ago with the triple. You can't give the guys you just mentioned three extra shots.
I heard David Duval last night on the Golf Channel. He said there's only been three players in the last 20 years that have won the Masters with a double on the card.
Yeah.
One double
and one
bogey.
Is Phil.
And that's it.
Phil's one of them. I know that.
That's it. And actually last year with Jordan Spieth, he had one, I think it was 17 on the Saturday.
On 17?
I think it was 17 on Saturday.
Okay.
Threw a six up.
He did. That's
and
exactly
he was,
right.
It was leading
so
by six
Phil,
at the time.
Phil Spieth and whoever. Yeah, you make a double when you're up six shots. Nobody
but the point.
Cares.
The point is you make those others, like
Stay
you
down.
Said, those big numbers.
Stay out of trouble.
On this golf course, that's a problem.
And
even though you got a lot of opportunity to get them back.
But the thing with the Masters is there's plenty of places to miss. There's no rough.
Yeah.
It's a next cut. There is no collars. There is no, if you throw it over here, you're knee deeper. No, that's the U.S. Open. Don't get your tournaments confused there. Keep the ball out of trouble. There are no overhanging limbs for the most part. If you're in the trees, you're in the trees. You just have to hit around them. You're not in the bushes.
It's not thick.
You can't go in there.
Generally.
But there is
you're off the golf course.
There is some water that can bother you on 16, but it shouldn't because you bail out away from the water.
Yeah.
That's what the really good players do. The players that get a little pressure, a little nervy, the guys that have to make a move on the back nine on Sunday. You've got water at Rays Creek in front of 13. You've got water in front of 12, the par three. Again, Fred Couples, his bacon was saved when that ball trundled, stopped.
Yeah.
Other guys have gone into their watery graves. There's water on 11, 12, 13, 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
It tests your nerves. It tests your shot making ability. But as all good courses and tournaments are. Good shots are good shots. Great shots are hyper-rewarded at Augusta. If you hit the right portion of the green, now it's as big as your laptop, but if you hit the right portion of the green, you should have chances to make scores.
Let's talk quickly about guys that they're on the radar, but they're not on the radar to the Spieth day. Well, I was thinking some of the I know you said young kids aren't the guys that are going to win
You
got guys like Danny Willett. You got some names that are coming up.
Daniel Berger.
I mean, some of these guys that are starting to make some noise, but aren't at that level of anywhere near the Spieths or McIlroys yet. Do they have a
chance? Willett's a great example. He's 28 or 29, just had his first kid a couple weeks ago. Willett last year in his first time, 71, 71, 76, 71.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Boom. Well, that one, T38.
Right.
Well, Bernd Wiesberger, I think, shot 76, 70, 71, 70. Again, that's four. You throw up a big one.
Yep.
You can't win a golf tournament when the tournament record is set, when the tournament record of birdies is set by Jordan Spieth last year. Justin Rose made 24 birdies last year, and nobody remembers that.
Yeah.
24 birdies. That's the third most all time. Mickelson made 25, didn't win, made 25. Yeah. Spieth broke that by three birdies. Avoid bogeys. Avoid crooked numbers. Step on the gas when you need to step on the gas. Take your medicine when you need to take the medicine. The young kids don't get that. They haven't had fear to deal with. They haven't had it. Daniel Berger hits the ball a mile. He's T5 last week.
Mm-hmm.
Shell. Hits the ball forever. In a day, can he putt? Is he going to be confident and trust his yardage book where he says,
Kirk,
that
Kisner,
putt,
Kepka, I mean, guys like this.
Yeah.
You know.
The killer Ks.
Yeah.
You can't list three of them. They got four or two. You can't.
Well,
Kisner's a little bit older. Kirk's a little bit older. Kepka's real young. And, again, those are the guys that have to look at their yardage book on Sunday afternoon and say, that putt breaks right. And your feet tell you it breaks left, and everything else in the world tells you it breaks left. Your caddy's not sure. You've got to trust that. The guys have had all those putts and have seen those putts throughout the years. No. They know where the Sunday pins are.
So give it.
Know where the Saturday pins
are. Give us
are.
The favorites.
Give us the favorites.
Your favorites.
They're self-explanatory. I think Rory McIlroy wins the golf tournament.
Yeah.
You know why?
Just,
he hits the ball in the right spot on the greens. He doesn't have to make every putt. Jordan Spieth made every putt last year.
Yeah,
guy putted the dimples off the golf. He's making 20-footers for fun.
Yeah.
Rory McIlroy hits to 8 feet. Those are a lot easier to make.
Yes,
and you're
are.
Going to make more of them, and he'll have more chances to do so because he's a good ball striker.
Mm-hmm.
Same reason Watson's in these things. Same reason Adam Scott's in these things. Guys, they drive it a mile, and they're great iron players.
Yep.
The great putters can win, but they have to make a lot more because they're not always on the green.
Mm-hmm.
They're grinding to get up and down. So I like ball strikers. That's why I gave you my top three right there. Yep. McIlroy, Scott, and Watson in that order. That's my try box.
No, McIlroy's an easy choice for me at this point. Jason Day would certainly seem to be poised.
He is, but the numbers kill him. He's won two in a row, two tournaments in a row.
Well, and Adam Scott's the same way.
He was 12th at Arnold Palmer and had a tough match play. He's kind of got he's got to refocus that angle. But Day's the number one player in the world. The only guy to win the Masters being the number one player in the world has been
Tiger Woods.
That's you're getting some company there.
Well, sure.
Why is Bubba third? Well, if he wins his third green jacket, he's in a real exclusive,
absolutely
guaranteed Hall of Fame. Oh my gosh, club.
Yep.
So that's you get a
Which
little nervy
fair,
there. But if McIlroy wins, he wins a career Grand Slam. No one's talking about that.
Yeah.
No one mentions that.
No, I mean there's
no one,
that's just
no
it. There are so many players at that in that top five level. There just aren't enough numbers in the five to include
no
them
Englishman
all right now.
Has won it since 1996.
That's what's exciting.
No European has won it since 1999. The numbers game, it's out there. You gotta
figure USA.
It out. USA. USA. Chris Kirk's my sleeper. Look out, Georgia
there you
boy.
Go. All right, folks, music means we got to take off. We'll head on out of here and we'll be back Monday, so tune in then. Don't go anywhere. We got Reds baseball coming up here in just a few minutes, and we will talk to you Monday. You've been in the zone.